Welcome to You Don't Even Like This Band, a podcast about bands you probably don't even like.
We hope you don't know this one.
With your hosts, Adam Todd Brown, Andy Sell, and Travis Clark.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the last official episode of the Fleetwood Mac season of You Don't Even Like This Band, or I guess I should say the last official episode of the first Fleetwood Mac season of You Don't Even Like This Band. I'm Adam Todd Brown. Who else is here?
I'm Travis fucking Clark.
I'm Andy Rhythm Cell.
And we are your hosts. How's everyone doing? It's been a while since we recorded.
It's been a little bit, and there's a slight amount of just a tear in my eye that this is our final our season finale. I know we'll come back and do more, but a little sad.
Yeah, we got a bonus episode coming after this for subscribers. But then I know I said on the last Rumors episode that we were just gonna jump right into Tusk. And after spending the weekend researching Tusk, people, that might have to be its own season. For all the credit Rumors gets for being this chaotic recording session that carried on forever, it's nothing compared to Tusk. Tusk is, I think it is going to be a season unto itself. So this week, we're talking about Fleetwood Mac after Rumors.
So it was a rumor that we would jump on to Tusk, but now we're just going to tell more rumors.
Right, because when it came to Rumors, things were one way.
Ah, mm-hmm. And then everything changed.
And then Rumors happened, and then everything changed. Yeah.
Picture things, but those things are not Tusky. They're just rumors.
Right, right. And I also just couldn't stomach the idea of Korn getting two seasons, but Fleetwood Mac doesn't.
I think we can get a third harvest out of Korn.
I think we could have done a whole season just on Korn's Unplugged, to be honest. That was
It is the Tusk of new metal.
It's true.
I am willing to go back and revisit Korn Unplugged anytime. I still maintain it's the second best MTV Unplugged ever. So, yeah, we're talking about Fleetwood Mac after Rumors. Because here's the thing. This season, it's getting a little long in the tusk, if you know what I mean.
I see. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah, this is already the eighth episode. We normally do like six, seven episodes.
I don't know if I would keep making tooth jokes.
Oh, yeah. I've had a lot of tooth issues recently and currently also. Bad times. I don't want to talk about it.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You need to work on your dental health, huh?
Oh, yeah, I got to take a dental health break this week.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, we are going to do one more bonus episode for subscribers, which is a thing we should have done before we started talking about Tusk, where we're just going to listen to the album and riff over it and talk about the songs, and people at home can listen with us. We had a different idea at first, meaning I had a different idea. And here's the thing. They can't all be winners. We were going to recap the Rumors episode of the classic Fox sitcom Glee. And Glee was a show I liked when it was on. Rumors is an album I like. Mm-hmm. So I thought this makes perfect sense. Sat down to watch it this morning, got about 3 minutes in and was like, this is fucking stupid. And it's going to be a stupid episode if we cover it.
Here's the problem. Glee, the entire series, is a cursed object. You can't watch it. It's like staring into the center of the anything
it's,
that'll
it's like it's the poltergeist of musical theater.
Yeah, it's like the Dybbuk box.
It's exactly what it is.
Zach Baggins just has a complete series box set of Glee in his museum.
Yeah, if you go to Zach Baggins, there's actually like Leah Michelle in glass. You can just see her there.
She's
like,
in the Annabelle box.
For the record, I cannot vouch hard enough for Zach Baggins' haunted museum in Las Vegas. It's cool as shit.
I will say, knowing that we were going to watch that or potentially talk about that episode, I watched Glee. I am not a Glee fan. And the only positive thing I can say about that whole episode is the one thing they got right was when they had people playing Lindsey Buckingham's guitar part, it took 10 people. That's the only thing that I was like, sense. That's accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, it was nonsense because it's also season 2, episode 19. So I'm just watching completely out of context. It would have been bad. But this
I've never seen Glee. So I'm fine with not doing that.
If you watch it now, like half of the cast is ghosts because they're just not with us anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. It, I think, is what set up a thing that happened later on down the road, which is Stevie Nicks was a cast member on American Horror Story.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Coven season. And when I was reading about the Glee episode, she apparently, when they were filming that, she showed up on set and hung out for like 6 hours. And it's like, you couldn't put her in a single scene? None?
Okay. No, they were too busy blowing cocaine up her butt.
Yeah, they were busy downloading files on that set at the time, if you know what I mean. Anyway, when we left off, Fleetwood Mac had just wrapped up the recording of Rumors. So that meant it was time to shoot that iconic album cover, which we've talked about a little bit, but let's talk about it more. Before they could shoot it, Stevie Nicks had to do something.
Oh, what's up?
She had to get them boobies worked on. She got breast augmentation in December 1976. Happy birthday to me. Actually, I wasn't born in December.
So a little TT tune-up before the photo shoot.
Yeah, this is a quote. I had them done in December 1976. I'd only been in Fleetwood Mac for 1 year, and I was getting a lot of attention. I had always thought my hips were too big and my chest was too small, so we went ahead with it.
I love that that's a we decision. We went ahead with it. Does she mean we as in the band, and this is like a decision that they all made because it's the only way they were going to put her on the album cover? Or is this we as in her, and I'm assuming their names are Rebecca and Vanessa?
You know, Andy, I never took you to be one of these people who would be so anti-pronoun and just against how people want to identify.
Okay, all right, look.
Whatever,
dude. We're not doing this. We're not talking about someone with dissociative identity disorder here.
You know, how Stevie wants to refer to themselves is really their business, and I'm just here to honor what their journey is.
It's a very androgynous name, Andy.
Travis. Adam.
No, Stevie is.
Stevie. Stevie Nicks.
Travis and Adam are arguably the most manly names.
Yeah, I would say that would be very confusing if her name was Travis Nicks. I'd
Who's being a little old-fashioned?
Me, because Adam is such a manly name, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Travis, too. I'm sticking with
my
it.
Name literally means manly, by the way.
In what language?
Hilarious.
To whom?
Andrew. Andrew means manly.
Yeah, mine means man of the earth. And it's like, no, get the earth away from me. I want to be inside.
Mine means traveler.
Or like Traviser.
Hey, Blues Traviser, everybody.
I just whip out a harmonica.
So this album cover was shot by the band's longtime photographer, Herbie Worthington, who we might remember from an earlier episode where he took the cover photo for the Heroes Are Hard to Find album. And that's the one where it looks like Mick Fleetwood and his child are engaging in body horror of some sort.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of black and white, right?
Yeah, it's black and white.
Yeah.
Mick Fleetwood's kid is standing on his feet and he's holding her hands. And then he's just wearing, like, a loincloth, and he looks gaunt AF.
I feel like Mick Fleetwood just buds. I don't think he has children so much as just another child grows out of him.
Yeah,
you know?
he has a growth.
Yeah,
they turn that branches.
They fall off him like the Cloverfield monster.
And they just start wearing rhythm vests and walking around like, whoa, no, look
they,
at that.
That's what they come out of the wooden balls that dangle from his belt. They just hatch one day.
Yeah, this is the wooden balls cover where he's got his wooden percussion balls hanging from his belt. We've talked about those before.
No, those are
Did
the,
he
the,
get those augmented?
No, that's those are his future children. Those are just embryos. Those are future Mick Fleetwoods just dangling.
Yeah.
What if you miss when you're playing the wooden percussion balls and just hit your
balls?
Skin percussion
your actual balls?
Yeah.
Well, you make another noise.
Does he do the thing where like you flip them around? And like that's part of the rhythm, like it's
oh, like those clacky ball things.
Yeah.
Those balls are actually going to come up again on this episode later. Don't you worry.
I don't want to talk about Mick Fleetwood's balls anymore. Do we know the name of the doctor that did Stevie's procedure?
No.
I'm just
no,
wondering if he like happened to have done like somebody else's, you know, if he's like a rock star's only.
I mean, probably, well, but.
But, you know, she got like boob job one, you know, like.
Yeah.
That's
the those, first
that,
one.
Yeah. That couldn't have been a very comfortable procedure or implant.
I mean, cosmetic surgery was actually a huge thing in Hollywood dating back to like the silent era.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've all seen LA Confidential. We know.
So Mick Fleetwood's also holding the same crystal ball on this album cover that he has on the cover of the White Album. It's an iconic album cover. I have two t-shirts that depict the Fleetwood Mac Rumors album cover. One, I got at Target that is white and just looks like the album cover. Never wear it because I hate white t-shirts. Mm-hmm. But then also on an episode of Poker Face, which is the Rian Johnson show that stars Natasha Lyonne. Very good show.
Oh, yeah.
The Mountain Goats are in an episode of that.
There's also an episode where she wears a Fleetwood Mac tour t-shirt that has like a cartoon-ish sort of depiction of the Rumors cover. And I found that shirt online and I bought that too. It's very cool.
Nice. Not white though, right?
No, it's black and purple.
Yeah, I can't abide a white t-shirt.
Yeah. Shit just starts finding a way to land on me when I wear a white t-shirt.
And then if you're a sweaty man like I am and you start doing activity, next thing you know, you're wearing a wet t-shirt that people can see your nips through.
Yeah, and there's no fun. Contest. Nobody's, you know, it's not a fun time. You're not going to win a prize.
There ends up being a contest of people who want to find a way to avoid you because they're like,
it's just a running
thank
game.
You. Yeah.
So this album cover actually ends up kicking off a bit of a conflict that will end up spanning two different albums, Rumors and Tusk both, which is the question of who should be on the cover of the album.
Mm. Well, obviously you don't want to just put the whole band on there. In some cases, you don't want to put anyone from the band on there, obviously.
Well, you're also in a band now where only one of the people named in the band is still in the band.
Yep, that's very true.
No.
Well, no.
John McVie's still in the band.
John McVie's still in the band.
Is he the Mac? Yeah. I thought it was the other. Yeah. Who was the guy he named
in the
very beginning?
You're thinking of Constable Big Mac. He was never Hollywood Mac.
Mayor Mac Cheese.
Mayor McCheese. Yeah. When does the Hamburglar join?
John McVie is the Mac in Fleetwood Mac. And Mick Fleetwood is the Fleetwood, obviously.
Yeah, and the Hamburglar was never an official member. He was just a session musician they brought in for a couple of tracks on Tango in the Night.
Yeah. Mm.
Oddly, they stole from him.
And it was only because he was dealing coke to everyone in the band.
And so, yeah, on this album cover, it's just Mick and Stevie. On the album cover before, the White Album, it's Mick and John, which... That made sense because...
Because they're the band. They're the name.
And they were so... Like, the other two, or Stevie and Lindsey, were so new to the band. But once Rumors rolls around, Lindsey Buckingham, he did all this work to bring everyone's songs to the finish line. That's one of the unique things about Fleetwood Mac, is they don't really have a producer and they don't have a manager. At least at this point, they didn't. Mick Fleetwood was the manager. Lindsey Buckingham was the producer. So he did all this work to make these songs pop the way they did. And then it comes time to shoot the album cover. And they're like, yeah, you're not going to be on it. It doesn't. We're going for an artistic thing.
It's also kind of, you know, they didn't take the Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young approach where it's like, as we bring in more people, we add the names to the band. Like it didn't become Fleetwood Mac, Nicks, Buckingham. Like then you can kind of make an argument of who needs to be on the album cover. Yeah. Dewey, Snortem, and Howe.
Yeah. I think it's funny that it's just Mick and Stevie, because obviously you can't have Lindsey and Stevie together on there because they're both just too attractive.
I feel like that photo would be a fight. Like they'd just be the two of them arguing.
Yeah. No one would have survived the photo shoot. Yeah, if they'd put Lindsey and Stevie on there, it's like they're both too attractive. If you're gonna have somebody as hot as Stevie Nicks on there, then you have to balance it out with like a high fantasy story ogre standing next to her in the form of Mick Fleetwood.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, the Slender Man is real.
Yeah. Oh, is that an Ent from Lord of the Rings?
I didn't know there were white Shreks. Crazy. So, and we've already talked about on one of the Rumors episodes about how Stevie Nicks was irate that the Tusk album just features a dog. It's Ken Kaye's dog, Scooter, who is undeniably a good boy. And Stevie Nicks, when she found out Scooter died, she reached out to Ken Kaye and was like, I'm glad I put a curse on Scooter because he took my album cover. It's like, damn.
Jeez.
For one thing, that should have been Lindsey Buckingham's album cover. He's got like
he was
40
due.
Songs on that album.
Yeah. You think there's like a Fleetwood Mac super fan who's like, I got Scooter's bones. You know, like they just...
Probably. I mean, we're going to talk about an auction at the end of this, and I didn't read everything in it, but I bet Scooter's bones are in there somewhere.
Scooter's Bones is a good band name, too.
It is. Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah. They also took another really famous photo around this time, but at a different photo session. This one with celebrity photographer Annie Leibovitz.
Wow.
For the cover of Rolling Stone.
And this photo's nuts.
There is a lot going on in this photo. For one thing, the entire band is in bed and they're either fully or partially naked.
And none of them are paired with their partner.
That's true.
No.
Well, I think John McVie might be paired with his partner.
Yeah. Yeah, John McVie is off to the side of the bed by himself reading Playboy. So yeah, he's paired up pretty accurately. He's just not drinking, which is weird.
And he is wearing pants.
Right.
He's the only one wearing pants.
He just has a very strange condition where his legs are blue. It looks like jeans, but he's actually fully nude.
Yeah. My brother had that. Denim skin.
Denim skin stuff. Yeah.
Denim skin. It's a rough one.
It's when you know you've been drinking too much when you get denim skin.
Right. It's like crocodile, that drug. Yeah. Lindsay and Christine are cuddled together under a blanket, and part of that blanket is covering Mick Fleetwood's wooden balls region.
Yep.
But he appears to be like mostly nude otherwise, and Stevie Nicks is cuddled up next to him in a silk nightgown. After this shoot, Mick Fleetwood went home and told his wife that he and Stevie Nicks had known each other in a past life. And Stevie Nicks also confirms that this was the first moment she felt a little sense of attraction to Mick Fleetwood. Nevertheless, the session ends with Lindsay all hot and bothered over Stevie's new jugs and everyone leaving the room so the two of them can make out a little, even though they'd already broken up by then. This fucking band, man, they are wild.
So Stevie and Mick are cuddling in the photo. Mick is like, I knew you in a former life. Stevie's like, I'm kind of into the tall man here. But then Lindsay's like, get out of the room. I need to make out with my girl.
I didn't love her before, but now that she has new tits, I do.
And listen, this is from Stevie Nicks' biography, like this story. And like, I assume she would have lobbied some public objections if it wasn't true. And yeah, that's kind of how it goes. They end up like, as everyone gets off the bed, Stevie and Lindsay just kind of linger there for a bit and start talking. And at this point, they like clean hated each other.
Yeah.
But Lindsay Buckingham's like, what up with them titties, though?
That's hilarious. Yeah, because...
Like, what that mouth do?
Like, like during recording sessions for this album that they're shooting a photo to promote in Rolling Stone, like... They're stopping recording sessions to like yell at each other.
Yeah.
Like or in between takes. They're not even that's the thing. They're not even doing it. This is how professional they are. They're so fucked up and they're so like tangled up in their weird feelings for each other, all of them, that like they record the album and then between takes, they're like threatening to kill each other. And then when they do a photo shoot, it's like, yeah, the photo shoot's fine. We'll just do this. But afterwards, I'm going to make out with my ex despite this whole weird chemistry that just started with this fucking necromancer over here.
I feel like then secondhand news is that's why Lindsay Buckingham is secondhand news, because these new titties are that's the main story.
That's the news right there.
The main thing I've noticed about this photo, and we have talked about this quite a bit, about the height of Mr. Fleetwood. He's longer than the mattress.
He is. I think he's like curling his spine a little bit to...
Yeah, he's struggling to fit on a California king.
Like, if you look where his knees are, one, it's at an angle, so there's, like, a perspective, you know, diminished there. But, like, it looks like he's, like, it's Photoshopped or something to cut out, like, a foot of his length.
He looks like Treebeard from Lord of the Rings.
He is 6 foot five.
Kneeling? Like, that's a 9 foot tall man.
That's him. That's him hunched for sure.
Lindsey Buckingham is 5'10". Stevie Nicks is 5'1". Apparently, no one knows how tall Christine McVie or John McVie are.
Because John McVie is just always laying down reading Playboy magazines in the corner. Like, he can't measure his height. He's never standing.
So, February 4th, 1977. Rumors is released. And expectations are through the roof. Because remember, the White Album, aka Fleetwood Mac, has been selling this whole time. Like, it's still doing pretty well by the time Rumors comes out. So Warner Brothers ends up shipping 800,000 copies of Rumors based on advanced orders from record stores.
That feels like a lot.
That's a lot. It was the most in the company's history at the time. So the album comes out, the reviews are like universally great, but Wikipedia points out that the LA Times called Rumors, quote, frustratingly uneven, end quote. What the fuck? How desperate are you for 1970s newspaper clicks that you call Rumors an uneven album?
What?
I mean, it was probably somebody, the critic was probably somebody who Stevie used to clean their house.
Probably.
And he was sad that he lost his cleaning lady.
And whoever that was, I feel like their son went on, or their child went on to start, you know, Pitchfork. It's like, let's just go and be shitty about albums for no reason.
Yeah. Which, funny you bring that up. I didn't put it in the notes, but when Rumors was reissued for one of its various anniversaries, Pitchfork reviewed it and gave it a 10.
Which what?
Pitchfork does not give 10s. So
Pitchfork hates everything.
Yeah. So get it together, LA Times. Like, retract your original Rumors review.
The time is come.
Yeah, it is time.
This is what we need to be striking about.
Yeah, exactly. Writers Guild, get back to work. Write us up a proposal for boycotting the LA Times. I don't know. So, yeah, aside from that, just universal acclaim and adoration. Literally everyone loved them except Lester Bangs. Mm. He hated them and the album both. But if people aren't familiar, Lester Bangs is the Hunter S. Thompson of music writing in that he is overrated as a writer and hot fucking garbage as a person. His review, or the article that is in, I think it's the Tusk book, his review of Rumors and Fleetwood Mac in general is some sexist, disgusting bullshit. And he at one point says, they're just going to be a footnote in history. So not only did he suck at writing, he also like sucked at information. Like he was bad.
Well, he was one of those guys who was like, I mean, he was clickbait as a person for sure. Yes. Like
he was, I mean, he sucked. I'm not a fan of Lester Bangs.
But otherwise, everyone else immediately recognized Rumors for what it was, which was just an amazing album. Depending on what account you read, it either sold a million copies in the first month or 10 million in the first month. I think it was a million.
Well, there's a zero. Maybe that should be there. It shouldn't. We don't know.
Yeah. Who knows?
That would be a crazy amount of records now. I feel like that's a crazy amount of records then.
Actually, now that I think about it, the 10 million in a month is absolutely wrong, because
it's impossible.
It had sold 8 million by the end of 77. So,
yeah.
But it, I believe, did sell a million copies the first month. So Rumors was a fucking cultural phenomenon when it came out. And this is the point in history where a really uncomfortable dynamic starts to form within Fleetwood Mac, where to the music buying public, Stevie Nicks is the center of the Fleetwood Mac universe and everything revolves around her, the obvious star. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, she's the one who needs the most help turning her song ideas into actual songs. and as such wields the least influence by far within the band, and especially in the studio. And that all super duper comes to a head when they start recording Tusk, but it starts here.
Okay.
I think that's super surprising. Like, that's really like the peek behind the curtain. Like, if you didn't know that, it's as we've done this and we dive into like the original ideas for some of her songs, you can see how they like needed some work to change them and make them more interesting. But if you didn't know that, you'd be like, yeah, that's who's holding this whole thing together.
Yeah, but, and we can talk about Lindsey Buckingham and all he contributes all day, but did Lindsey Buckingham get new tits? No. That's
good point. He did cut his hair and start wearing eyeliner during Tusk, but
that's important. Hey, that's a start.
Yeah. That's a start. And that dynamic also starts wearing on Lindsey Buckingham, because he, on the flip side of that, is like, I'm doing everything in the studio. Like, I am basically writing all of your songs. And meanwhile, everyone's like, yeah, but Stevie Nicks, though. And he's like, okay, what about me?
Yeah, Lindsey, that's great. Take your shirt off and let's have a look.
Lindsey, that's awesome. So tell us about your ex-girlfriend. She seems awesome.
But for now, before that can all boil over during the Tusk sessions, it's time to tour.
Hell yeah.
About a month after Rumors was released, the band embarked on a massive international tour to promote the album, which, again, had already sold a million copies by then. And this tour almost wrecked Stevie Nicks, because for one thing, she's like 18 months removed from being a housekeeper for a living. She's not used to using her voice as much as she is
now. Oh, God. Yeah.
And it reminds me of a thing you see in basketball, where in college basketball, you play like 30, 32 games a season. And then you go to the pros and you play 72 games a season, and the competition level is so much higher. And it's a really rough transition, because it's just so much more work.
So they're taking Stevie Nicks and they're making her play 72 basketball games?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That seems like really a very grueling schedule. And she's 5'1"? That's tough.
I think she's going to the Pro Bowl, though. She's going to go Pro Bowl.
And so her voice just starts wearing out, and no one's really addressing it. Like, everyone around her can hear it. Like, the band has to know. Like, the people close to her are like, your voice is fucking wearing out. And they just let it go to the point that they end up having to cancel shows near the end of the tour, because her voice just got worn down. But that's to be expected. Mm. That's a singer using their instrument. I saw Miranda Lambert in Las Vegas back in April, and I was terrified that she was going to cancel that show, because she had canceled the two previous shows because a doctor told her to rest her voice. It happens. What's less expected is what happened to Stevie Nicks' eyes on this tour.
Were they sold at the auction that's coming?
did they put her eyes on her new boobs so she had like boob eyes?
I'm starting to regret bringing up the breast job.
Oh my God, I want Stevie Nicks to have eyeballs on her breasts so bad.
Like a Pan's Labyrinth, but on the
like eyelids and everything that open and close.
Yeah. If either of you had watched American Horror Story, you'd know she already does.
I did watch it. Actually, I'm one of the few people I think that likes that season the best of all of the American Horror Story seasons that I've seen.
The American Horror Story is like my guilty pleasure, I think. Like, I really like most of American Horror Story a lot.
I really dislike most of it, but I keep watching it.
Yeah. So, back to her eyes. At one point early on in the tour, she injured her corneas after leaving her contact lenses in for two solid days while partying.
Yeah, that's not good.
And here's the thing. I bet you what happened is she developed ulcers on her cornea from doing that. And I'm guessing that because it's happened to me three times, because I've been wearing contact lenses for my entire life because I'm super blind, like so much so that wearing glasses is a problem. But it's never happened because I was partying for 48 consecutive hours. Just sometimes, like, if you leave your contacts in too long, it can happen. If you like don't realize you didn't clean them properly, it can happen. Mm-hmm. I had an eye infection that I am just now recovering from. And that's exactly what it was.
See, you know, I've known Adam for a while now, and he's always great on like a big bender. He'll be like, it's been 36 hours. I got to take my lenses out. And he'll just, he won't leave them in for 2 days. He just won't do it.
I refuse.
No.
Yeah. I have standards.
She was also probably doing cocaine through her eyes.
She's just putting cocaine in her contact lenses and sticking them in. Yeah, just. I want to look at the world through coke-tinted glasses.
Scooping them up, scooping like a key bump, a lens bump out of a baggie with her contact, and then just slapping it in.
What's crazy is when this happened, she still had to go out and play a show at Oakland Coliseum, and damn, I hope that show was at night, because when this happens, when you injure your cornea in any way, daylight is brutal. Like you vampire up and stay inside in the dark until it passes. So
is this when she starts wearing the veils and stuff, or is that later?
I think she came out of the womb wearing that shit.
She used to wear the veil when she was cleaning houses. That's just a Stevie thing.
And so either way, the book doesn't mention if it was an outdoor show or not, but she gets through that show, and then a doctor orders her to bandage her eyes for a few days, like horror movie shit. And of course the band swings into protection mode to make sure everything is safe and comfortable for Stevie Nicks. Just joking. They start pranking the shit out of her.
Okay. That makes more sense with the Calhoun crew.
Calhoun crew.
They
were just, okay, it was a special Calhoun that Lindsay did where he just threw acid in her eyes. That's what happened.
Just throws a drink in her face. Oh my God, what happened?
He's putting like ottomans in front of her mic stand. She comes walking out, clunk, Dick Van Dyke on the way up to the
mic. Do mention that even her assistants, like her most trusted advisors, get in on it and start dressing her in mismatched outfits, just sending her out.
Oh my God, that's so mean.
Although I feel like she leans into it because like 80s Stevie Nicks was wearing some crazy stuff. Like, I feel like she's like, well, this is going back to my eye days. I'm just going to keep dressing this way.
That's a thing that we're going to find more in season two or when we start talking about Tusk. But Fleetwood Mac, they're mean. Like, they're not nice people. Like, there's a moment we'll talk about when we get into the recording of Tusk where Dennis Wilson, who is a music legend, like he was in the Beach Boys. He's had a really great solo album out by that point. He's in the studio and he makes like just a minor suggestion about a song. And they're like, fuck you, get out of here. Like they're so angry at him. And that's just like, yeah.
Get out of our nitrous pit. We don't take suggestions from you, sir.
And so after she recovers, the band spent the next 6 weeks zigzagging all over the U.S. in a chartered jet, playing mostly arena shows. And if you're thinking chartered jet, that sounds expensive. Wait till they tour behind the Tusk album.
I know this one.
It escalates. And here's a quote from Stevie Nicks. If there was a presidential suite, the girls got it. Or two presidentials, we got them, me and Chris. That was the way of the world. For women, it's harder. You have makeup, hair, nails, all this shit you have to do. The boys bitched about this, but in the end, it was like, happy wife, happy life. It's a quote from Stevie Nicks. And again, if you think that sounds like some diva shit, wait till they start checking into hotel rooms on the Tusk tour.
I mean, in context, it sounds reasonable to me, you know?
Yeah.
I do think Stevie Nicks deserves the presidential suite over the other guys because, you know, they were mean to her while she was blind.
Also, I feel like the presidential suite is probably doesn't have the clearance for Mick Fleetwood to go in. It's like, nah, you need like 18-foot ceilings to let that man get in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of being mean to Stevie Nicks, we talked about Silver Springs a lot on one of the Rumors Jesus episodes. Christ. And one of the details I didn't find in my research the first time around, I don't think, is that Stevie Nicks, when she initially thought that song was going to be on the album, she signed the publishing rights over to her mom because her mom was the type who like would not take money from people, but she needed money. Mm-hmm. And Stevie Nicks was like, this album's going to be huge. If I sign this song over, my mom's going to be fucking set for life. And then at the last minute, they pull that song off the album. And at that point, she had already told her mom that she was going to get all this publishing money from Rumors and had to go back and be like, yeah, actually, that's not happening. And that's ripple effects from that almost destroy this band later.
I mean,
on.
That should have destroyed this band. That's so fucked up.
It's really mean. Like, it's really fucking mean. Especially in one thing we did talk about, when they decided to cut it and recorded I Don't Want to Know instead, Stevie Nicks wasn't even in the studio. They did all of that without her. And then she showed up the next day and they were like, hey, fuck your mom. So,
and your tits and your eyes.
So Rumors, first hit number one on the Billboard charts on May 21st, 1977, knocking the Eagles Hotel California album out of the top spot.
Thank God.
Yeah. Fucking Eagles. Stayed at number one for 8 months. It's a long time.
That's most of the year.
Yep.
That's into the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. They spent the rest of the year on the road promoting the album even more. This is a quote from Mick Fleetwood. Arrgh, 'twas the heyday of Fleetwood Mac. It was full on work, touring, airplay, success. We all felt we were on the old roller coaster and we were heading up. End quote.
That's how he ends every quote. He actually just says, end quote. Yeah.
And that may be true, but this is also the point in history where Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks both are already thinking about leaving the band. But we'll get into that more when we start talking about Tusk.
What? She's 18 months into being in the band. She's new body parts into being in the band. And she's like, I'm out of the band.
I mean, you got to see it from her perspective, though. Like,
she couldn't see from her perspective.
When, like, it's not like she brings nothing to the band. For one thing, it's pointed out in one of the books I read for this that Lindsey Buckingham's not the strongest lyric writer. And that's a thing that I think has carried on his entire career. Yeah, yeah. And Stevie Nicks helped him out a lot in that way. And also, you know, whether she's actively working on the songs or not, what she brings to them visually on stage, it's still really important. And meanwhile, in the studio, the band is just like, yeah, but you can't fucking play a guitar. And like, she's like, yeah, but people fucking love me.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the reason we're selling this many records. Like, yeah, the record is amazing. Not to take away from that, but like, she's a big part of why the record is amazing, but also why their live shows are such a big deal. Like, why they're getting Rolling Stone cover. Like, why people love this band. She's a huge part of that, more so than any other individual member.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Lindsey Buckingham.
I mean, personality wise.
Yeah, personality wise.
Celebrity wise. Yeah.
And I think something she realized around this time after she had broken up with Lindsey Buckingham is that, yeah, he helps me get my songs to where they need to be, but so can any number of other talented people. Like, I can collaborate with whoever the fuck I want and make albums.
You don't have to be hate fucking your producer. You can just work with people.
Right.
Yeah.
So by this point, she's not only thinking of leaving the band, she's thinking of starting a record label, putting out solo albums, starting a clothing line. Like, her mind is going all over the place. And it's because she feels like she's kind of just dismissed in the studio.
Well, and yeah, she's dismissed in the studio by these people that she's working with. But and then on the other hand, like we said, she's 18 months removed from cleaning houses for a living. And now she is a bona fide superstar.
Yeah.
You know what she should be doing? Starting her own coffee line. I drink Stevie Nicks coffee.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I still got some of that corn coffee.
No, you don't. No way you do.
I don't. I threw that away immediately.
Because there's no way that stuff lasts long. The half-life of that is an hour.
Hey, everybody. This is Adam, host of the podcast you're listening to right now. Just dropping in to let you know that if you're enjoying this Fleetwood Mac season of You Don't Even Like This Band, but would prefer to hear it without annoying ads like this one, head on over to youdontpod.supercast.com and sign up for the You Don't Even Like This Band Backstage Pass for just $4 a month. Not only do you get ad-free episodes, you get access to an absolute litany of bonus episodes that you can't hear anywhere else. But wait, there's more. Subscribers also already have access to the entirety of the second Fleetwood Mac season of You Don't Even Like This Band. And since we finished that, we've put up a bunch of bonus episodes, and we're gearing up to start a new season about a completely different band that you don't even like. There's a lot to listen to, and you can listen to it all for just four little dollars a month. Head to youdontpod.supercast.com and sign up for that or any of our other subscription options and start listening right away. And thanks. We love you. Let's get back to the podcast. So let's deviate just a little bit and talk about a weird thing that happened during the heyday of Rumors. In the midst of all the pandemonium surrounding that album, a thing happens that just demonstrates how hungry the public is for Fleetwood Mac songs. There's a band called Atlanta Rhythm Section that was on the charts at the time with a song called Imaginary Lover. You've probably heard it. Let's listen to just a little bit for the people at home. It's actually a very good song.
I feel like this is what plays in John McVie's head while he's looking at Playboy.
Probably. I thought they were going to get to the chorus there, and they did not. So, too bad, Imaginary Lover. Now,
if you ever seen a photo of the band, it looks like a collection of failed serial killers who got together to start.
Yeah.
That's every band. If you've seen Blood, Sweat, and Tears, come on.
These guys, this looked like it was like, people run too fast. What if we played music?
And so, weirdly, I guess this isn't this weird because this is the vinyl record era. And what people found out is that if you took Imaginary Lover by the Atlanta Rhythm Section and sped it up from 33 RPMs to 45 RPMs, which is a very common mistake to make when you're listening to albums, it sounded exactly like Fleetwood Mac with Stevie Nicks on vocals. And I went out and tracked that down, and holy shit, does it ever. Here goes.
Wow.
That's so weird.
That is so weird.
It's crazy that they cut this from Rumors, too. They just really dipped her over, just over and over again.
And apparently Atlanta Rhythm Section, for some reason, was unhappy that this became news. And it's like, what band would not want to be associated with Fleetwood Mac?
Yeah, but I mean, you never want to be like associated in the way where it's like your entire existence is becomes questioned as a conspiracy theory of some sort.
Or hear me out. Are like Mick Fleetwood and Lindsey Buckingham cutting a song by Stevie Nicks, inventing another band and putting it out slowed down and being like, no, look, this song isn't even yours, Stevie.
I mean,
it's just a giant gaslight.
It wouldn't be the first time there was a fake Fleetwood Mac out there.
That's true.
And
they do love gaslighting Stevie. So maybe you're onto something.
I think so.
I just thought it was funny that one of their album covers, it just says ARS. It's just my initials. So I'm going to start calling myself the Atlanti Rhythm Section.
I love it.
That's pretty
great. I think you should. I'm surprised it's taking you this long to come up with that.
When this happened, they were already working on Tusk. And because this is a band that just loves to relentlessly fuck with each other, Stevie Nicks got a recording of this song sped up and then snuck it in with a bunch of her other demos and played them for Christine McVie. And Christine McVie was like, that Imaginary Lover song, that's a good one. And she's like, ha ha, fuck you, bitch. It's not even my song. I'm paraphrasing.
I'm going to say mean things about you when you die.
We don't even need you in this band. And when she said that, that was fun.
Oh, gosh.
So
what a Kowloon.
So anyway, by December 1977, Rumors had sold 8 million copies. And according to Rolling Stone at the time, was still selling 200,000 copies a week. They mentioned that at its peak, it was selling enough to go gold twice a month or platinum every 30 days. And that is just vinyl LP sales, which I guess is how things worked back then, because in Rolling Stone mentions this separately, the 8-track went platinum and the cassette went gold. Very different time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Have you ever seen a platinum cassette? Like, you know, the platinum record looks cool. When they give you a platinum cassette, it's really sad.
Yeah.
It's just like this weird little square. And you're like
I'm going to sell this.
Yeah, I'm not keeping this at all. Yeah.
Check me out next season on Pawn Stars. So
best I can do, $20.
My favorite part about Pawn Stars, if you brought something like that in and you were like, listen, I was Lindsey Buckingham's personal assistant for 20 years. I was very closely involved with Fleetwood Mac. I would like to sell this. The first thing the guy on Pawn Stars is going to do is go, well, you might not know this, but Fleetwood Mac has one of the best-selling albums of all time. Like, they just spit the most basic Wikipedia facts at the most knowledgeable collectors. And they just have to stand there and take it like, oh, yeah, Rumors? Huh.
Never heard of it. Oh, wow.
Craig, yeah, you know that's the name of the cassette I'm selling you. Okay, fine. So
that's TV, baby. Show business.
The album eventually went on to win them a Grammy for Album of the Year, of course. Like, how crazy would it have been if Rumors didn't win the Grammy? In a 1978 Rolling Stone article. I just want to see Mick
Fleetwood get up at the Grammys and go, I'm going to let you finish. But
pushing Toto off the stage.
Kicking Elton John in the face.
Our Fleetwood Mac is for the children.
He gets arrested at a Burger King after the...
Sorry. In a 1978 Rolling Stone article about the public reception to the Rumors album, they bring up a question that annoys the shit out of me, that people seem to still be asking to this day, which is, what is it about Rumors that made it so immediately successful? And the question... Like, Chuck Klosterman asked the question at one point, and...
Speaking of dildos.
Yeah, like, what people are implying with this question is, well, there's nothing special about it. Like, there's nothing that stands out about it. So there must be, like, some kind of right time, right place sort of factor. And people point to stuff like they were the only, like, major white American band that was, like, working women into the fold since, like, the Mamas and Papas. There were more record stores at the time. And it's like, I think everyone's overthinking it. It's just a good fucking album. It's, like, universally good.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is something to be said about like whatever X factors that you can look at. That's, I always find that approach like contextually interesting when we're talking about stuff like this. But also like, yeah, to like focus so much on it really is to take away from like, look, they put a lot of work into this record. It's unlike anything else really at the time. And it's good.
It's
like, they had somebody engineer a single specifically so it would sound good on car stereos. Like, we're not talking about people that are just like, oh, I'm going to write some songs and put it out. Like, they literally, all of them drove themselves insane making this record.
And
so it's good.
Mick Fleetwood brings up an interesting point about it in his book, which is, like, for one thing, the reason Rumors is so good is they meticulously poured over this music and got everything right until the point that like nearly everyone who listened to it, like 9 out of 10 listeners agree, Rumors fucking rules. And
the whole thing where they were like driving the masters or whatever, you know what I mean? Like to make sure that they didn't like degrade, like that alone means that they took it seriously.
People treat that part of it like that was them being like indulging in rock star excess and being all coked out. And no, that's the Tusk album. That when we get to Tusk, that's what happens there. But he's like, no, we just knew this was going to be our breakthrough. Like we knew how good this album was going to be and we didn't want to fuck it up. And he also credits the fact that they didn't have a manager. Like that allowed them to spend all that time and not have anyone coming to them being like, hey, the record label's really in my ear. You got to get this done. Like the record label would call Mick Fleetwood and he'd be like, fuck you. Like you'll get the album when you get it. And he was right. And I think it's just one of the things that stood out to me about the broad appeal of the Rumors album, Vibe Magazine, which is a mostly rap and R&B publication, mm-hmm. also has Rumors on their list of the best albums of all time. Like, it's not right to call it non-offensive, but that's kind of what it is. I can't imagine anyone listening to Rumors and being like, ooh, I don't like how that sounds.
Yeah.
But it's like the opposite of Chinese Democracy, where it's like, you can let somebody go off and be like, the record's going to be ready when the record's ready. And then the next thing you know, like a decade and a half have gone by and they put out something that you go, I don't think this would have sold as a follow-up to your big album.
Because that's what happens when you have somebody that's so out of touch.
Sure, right? But I think it is, I won't say right place, right time, but there is a kind of a thing when it becomes a cultural moment, it becomes a juggernaut. You can't stop it. It's picking up speed on its own. But the people who made it knew what they had, and so they took the time to craft it right, which I think is what you're saying.
And I mean, as far as cultural stuff, the music industry was just the biggest of the entertainment industries at the time. It was bigger than movies. It was bigger than TV. The music industry was fucking booming. So that definitely had a lot to do with why Fleetwood Mac sold eventually 40 million albums. But it also had to do with why the fucking Eagles sold so many albums. And no one talks about the Eagles the way they talk about Fleetwood Mac.
Do we all collectively hate the Eagles because of the Big Lebowski?
I no, just hate the Eagles.
We all hate the Eagles because of Hotel California.
I hate the Eagles as people.
Yeah.
But they got some, I mean, they have some songs, and I saw them in concert and it was pretty great. They did do an intermission in the middle of a 90-minute show. It's like, you are not that old in 2003, Glenn Frey.
Yeah, Joe Walsh can't stand for that long, though. I think he needs a break.
He's my favorite Eagle.
I know, but I'm saying, like, literally, I think physically, I don't think he can stand for that long.
I'm not refuting what you said. Yeah. Fuck you, Travis. He's my favorite. He can stand forever.
I just want to make sure it wasn't like I was saying, like, he's because he's fucking high. Like, I think he has physical issues.
Saw the Eagles at the Tacoma Dome in 1974, and Joe Walsh stood on one leg the whole time.
Yeah, but since then, he has developed a really bad case of denim skin.
That's true.
So he just lies in bed and reads a Playboy all day now.
He's almost entirely made of denim at this point.
Yeah, I love some Eagles. There are a couple Eagles songs that I genuinely love.
Yeah.
But they're like,
yeah, Take It Easy is such a banger. They have some songs. They're a greatest hits band, and that's I always hate when a band's greatest hits is like one of the best-selling albums of all time. And in the case of the Eagles, their greatest hits album is like 7 or 8. So speaking of album sales, what's really interesting about Rumors is that it just never stopped selling. Like, literally to this day, it still sells. As of now, the tally is around 40 million albums sold, making it the 6th best-selling album of the 70s and the 12th highest-selling album of all time. But what's especially impressive is how many physical copies it still sells. In 2022, The Guardian reported that, according to the UK's official charts company, Rumors sold 34,593 vinyl copies in 2021, which was third only to new albums by Adele and ABBA, and ahead of new albums by the likes of Ed Sheeran and Lana Del Rey. At the time of that article, it was at number 29 in its 926th week on the UK album charts. In the last week of January 2022, Rumors sold 6,000 vinyl copies, reaching number one on the vinyl album charts in the United States. It sold 169,000 vinyl copies in the US in 2021, making it the 12th best-selling vinyl LP of the year. That is crazy.
And that right there, I think, should be all we need to say to Chuck Klosterman, right?
Yeah.
Of like, people are still buying, like, this many years later, these many decades later, people are still buying this record enough to put it on, like, lists like this every year. Like, that, it's that good. That's all you need to know, buddy.
By way of comparison, and maybe this is a weird comparison, I looked up how many records Alanis Morissette sold with Jagged Little Pill, because I feel like that kind of had a cultural touchstone moment too, where it just kind of wouldn't stop. That sold 33 million copies to date. So granted, Rumors is an older record, but it still outsold something that was ubiquitous with, like, you couldn't escape that record at one point.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah. And yeah, there are sometimes extenuating circumstances that bring it back into people's memory. There was that TikTok video of the guy
Dogface.
Yeah. Dogface 420.
Yeah, the guy skateboarding, listening to Dreams, drinking Ocean Spray cranberry juice. Then he starts lip syncing it. Did you watch the compilation that I linked to? Because if not, you missed the second video in that compilation of people skateboarding and lip syncing to Dreams while drinking cranberry juice. Mick Fleetwood.
What?
That's amazing.
How did I miss that? I saw the one that I kept seeing was a guy with like a jack-o'-lantern head.
Yeah,
drinking that one. A pumpkin spice latte. Big fan of that one.
Yeah. And
dude, we should, how come we're not skating and drinking cranberry juice and listening? I mean, it worked out great for Dogface. He ended up on all kinds of
dogs.
Yeah.
I would break my arm immediately.
Yeah, I would die. I would probably die. Yeah. I would get ulcers in my cornea and I would get new tits.
So there was also that time Christine McVie died. That moved some units. But
how come we're not dying all the time and moving units?
That was a radio-friendly unit shifter, Christine McVie's death.
But there's also an interview with a record store owner in the Guardian article about how Rumors keep selling. And that Guardian article is from 2022, I think. And what he points out is that there's obviously been this boom in vinyl sales and people getting back into vinyl. And if you're building a collection from scratch, Rumors is such an obvious and safe, like, first choice.
Yeah.
Like, everyone knows it, everyone loves it. And if you're in that mindset where, like, I'm going to build a vinyl collection, you're going to have Rumors in it. So it's just good. It's just good. Rolling Stone ranked it number 7 on its list of the 500 greatest albums of all time. In 2017, it was selected for preservation in the National Recording Registry, meaning it was deemed culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress. And it was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 2003.
You know, the Voyager probe famously has the gold disc on it that's supposed to tell you how Earth works. We should have just put a copy of Rumors on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just out there, some alien species like thousands of light years away is just starting to hear.
Would you rather hear hello in 12 different languages or rumors? You'd be like, I got to go where this came from. Yeah. Where did this come from? Yeah.
These people are cool. Let's smoke a doob. It's a quote from the aliens.
Blow some space cocaine up my butt and let's fly to Earth.
That reminds me, you remember those shirts that would, it was like a picture of an alien and it said with a joint in his hand, it said, take me to your dealer. Remember those?
Yeah.
I need one of those shirts.
You are one of those shirts.
So even Mick Fleetwood's wooden balls are still selling to this day.
Yeah. Go to the toy section of any Target.
I cannot tell you how remorseful I am that we missed this auction.
Dude, seriously.
In 2022, Mick Fleetwood's wooden balls were put up for sale by Julian's Auctions in Beverly Hills and sold for $128,000. Also, a hat Stevie Nicks made for him and his Rock and Roll Hall of Fame trophy, both sold at the same auction for around $16,000 each. Is he doing all right?
Listen, it's hard running a restaurant in Maui. You know, it takes a lot of capital to keep those places open. I think he's just liquidating.
He would.
Wouldn't he want that trophy like at the restaurant?
You would think. Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah. He should start like Mick Rock instead of Hard Rock. Like, and just have like all of the like things from his life in there when you go in.
It is interesting to note that by far the poorest members in Fleetwood Mac are Mick Fleetwood and John McVie, because they don't write songs. So Christine McVie, Lindsey Buckingham, Stevie Nicks get all this publishing money. Meanwhile, like The Chain is the only song credited to all of them. So Mick Fleetwood, like, I'm sure he's rich, but he's not rich enough that you can't talk him out of his Rock and Roll Hall of Fame trophy for 16 grand.
I want to buy so many of Mick Fleetwood's things now.
Well, that's the thing. This auction was from the collection of John McVie, Christine McVie, and Mick Fleetwood. And we'll link to it in the show notes. The list of things that were sold is amazing. And that's what makes me wish I knew this auction was happening. Because no, I cannot afford to buy Mick Fleetwood's balls for $128,000. But I would have totally outbid whoever paid $320 for his Swiss Army knife.
Oh, man. Yeah.
There's probably still enough cocaine residue on that thing to get high right now.
I was going
to
say, there's definitely blood and cocaine still on the things in that Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
I don't know what you use it for in the Swiss Army, but I use it to chop up me cocaine.
I actually killed an entire Swiss Army with this knife.
Fleetwood's restaurant, he's autographed everything in it. Like, if you want a Mick Fleetwood collectible, go to his restaurant. He'll sign pretty much anything.
The Swiss Army knife's not even an actual Swiss Army knife. It's just a steak knife from his restaurant that he used to kill someone from Switzerland.
And he just drew a little cross on it.
Also, I might not have $11,250 for Christine McVie's set of three dolphin-shaped swivel chairs. Which, who wouldn't want that?
Yeah.
But I could have swung the 256 for her floral armchair, you know?
Yeah.
Real missed opportunity for us. We could have picked up.
That's a good price for an armchair anyway, you know?
Do we need to set up like a Google alert for the next auction? You know, we can pick up. I mean, look, Mick has clearly got an everything must go vibe. So we could probably get something.
I want his safari hat from that one video where they're in the desert.
Fucking percussion vest.
Yeah.
I want the broken mirror that he's looking at in that one video.
I want the dildo they used to have on stage with them.
Oh, when, yeah. I want a condom filled with milk.
Yeah. Yes.
Man, I tell you what, the Fleetwood Mac has the ability to, their relics are like the lesser known stuff. That's what we can afford. But the stuff that's, you know, like the Greeny, the guitar that went for $2 million to Kirk Hammett. We should just let Mick Fleetwood touch some of our stuff and see if it becomes more valuable.
Yeah.
Let's just send a bunch of things to Mick Fleetwood. And be like, just take a bunch of photos of you holding these things and then send them back to us.
Yeah. Speaking of Peter Green, and this is foreshadowing to next season when we dive into Tusk and the rest of Fleetwood Mac's output. There's a moment during the recording of Tusk where Peter Green shows up in the studio and ends up playing a solo at the end of one of Stevie Nicks' songs. And then in like when they were mixing at one point, Lindsey Buckingham's like, no, this isn't what this song needs. We should cut this. And everyone else in the band was like, yeah, yeah, we should cut this. So Peter Green came back and they were like, sorry, Green Manalishi, not today.
And he's like, all good, no worries. I'm going back to the Blues Breakers now.
I'm just going to go back and be crazy again. It's fine. Don't mind me.
Donate all of my solos to Jesus.
That's and then he just so disappears. Nuts.
So that's the end of the episode. And if you're listening to this for free, that's the end of the first Fleetwood Mac season. We will pick up season two with the recording of the Tusk album, which is probably worthy of a season all into itself, but we'll see how it goes. If you're a subscriber, we got, I think, a couple bonus episodes. I think we should do it for the White album too.
Oh, nice. Maybe.
But we're going to do some listening party episodes where we listen to the White album, we listen to Rumors, and just talk about the songs. And you, the people at home, listen along with us. It's going to be great. You better fucking love it.
Yeah. Or if you don't, we're going to send Mick Fleetwood to you, and it's going to be intense.
It's going to be a real, real problem.
We're going to make him cuddle with you on a mattress and take photos with Annie Leibovitz.
Yeah. When he asks you to whittle him some new wooden balls, you're going to rue this day. So, hey, thank you both for doing today's episode. Lots of fun. In terms of things to plug, there's so much going on, and I don't know when this goes public, so I don't have anything to plug. Follow me on Instagram at Adam Todd Brown. Travis, what do you got?
Yeah, follow me on Instagram at Adam Todd Brown.
Very nice. I appreciate that. Andy?
You can find me at on Instagram at Adam Todd Brown.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And there should be a YouTube page for this show now, but I don't know what it's called. So that's also a pretty pointless plug. I haven't set it up yet. I think that's it. Let's get out of here. Andy, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Travis, say goodbye.
Mateys, thank you for sailing on this incredible voyage. Goodbye.
Arr, goodbye, everybody. We love you.